Now let's have a look at flexible trusts in a little bit more detail. In the last section, Sandra was left with a new set of circumstances when advising Mary Jones as to what she should do with the existing policy on her life that was in trust under MWPA 1882 for Don, her deceased husband. Sandra, you may recall, persuaded the underwriters to issue a new policy on existing terms, but under the terms of a flexible trust, which gave discretion with regard to the beneficiaries. You may recall that Don Jones had died, and under the terms of an absolute trust, his estate would have been the beneficiary had Mary subsequently died, as could have been the case in a road accident involving the two of them, or some other form of major disaster. There are always tax implications to any decision regarding the type and style of trust that is used in certain circumstances. However, for the average family with an average house and an average lifestyle, the tax implications of the trust become less important than the decision-making process of settling the trust in the first place. What Mary required was a specific trust in favour of Belinda, her daughter, but with the flexibility inbuilt to accommodate her possible remarriage, although Mary stated at the time of Don's death that remarriage was an extremely remote possibility. And of course, this is 15 years on that has proved to be the case. She's still a widow at home, living off the benefits of that original policy and looking after her daughter, having not remarried. Although a flexible trust, or interest in possession trust, as it is more popularly known, was created, it was not without its difficulties. Mary had read, on several occasions, that the trustees under any trust should always be younger than the life assured. That's the subject of the policy. And obviously this was to avoid the trustees predeceasing the life assured. Now, what would you advise in Mary's circumstances? Mary was aged 27, and her parents were middle-aged. Now, she was emotionally very close to her parents. They lived nearby, and they enjoyed a good relationship with their granddaughter. Now, the statement, trustees should always be younger than the life assured, is quite easily made, but what are your views on that statement? Should trustees always be younger than the life assured? And why? In the event of one of the grandparents dying before Mary, could the trustees, at that point, appoint someone else to act as a trustee with the surviving grandparent? Who would be the surviving trustees in the event of one grandparent dying? And who would make the appointment if it was necessary? Well, just switch off for a moment and jot down on a piece of paper who you think would be left. Who would be the surviving trustees? It's good to have you back. And let's look at mortality, or consider mortality, for Mary and her parents. Now, on the basis of the Government Actuary Department 9698 tables, what is the probability of granddad or grandma dying before Belinda's 21st birthday, which is when the life insurance on Belinda's mother expires? Well, male mortality shows that there's a 12.97% chance of granddad predeceasing the end of the policy. For grandma, a mere 5.02% probability that she would expire before the policy does. Now, in broad terms, statistically, there's approximately a 17% chance of a male who is eligible to take ordinary premium life insurance at the age of 20.